Tomorrow, February 24th, will mark 2 years into Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine. While the fighting still rages on, we're seeing growing war fatigue across multiple realms, from Ukraine's failure to score a major counteroffensive to the widening division among its Western allies. For some insights into the current state of the conflict and its prospects, we're now joined by expert Randall Stone, professor of political science at the University of Rochester. He's also director of the university's Scanley Center for Polish and Central European Studies. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Stone.
My pleasure. Good to talk to you.
In the first year of the war, Ukraine's resilience and the leadership, President Volodymyr Zelensky, took the world by surprise. We celebrated it. He was covered by major media outlets as a hero. How has the situation changed in the last year? And I know this is a complex question, but is Russia even close to winning the war?
That's a wonderful question. No, as you say, in the first months of the war, our expectations were dashed. We thought that Ukraine would rapidly be overrun by Russian forces. The superiority of the Russian military seemed obvious. And somehow Ukraine was spunky and was able to fight back. They were able to avoid having their air force caught on the ground. They were able to contest the war. And then in the summer, they drove back Russian forces from the northeastern part of the country. So it was a stunning success. In the second year of the war, with substantial aid from the West, new technologies, substantial new artillery, even armored forces were provided, it seemed sure that Ukraine would be able to repulse the Russian invasion and make significant progress. But it turned out that that wasn't the case, right? That the prevailing technology of warfare in the 21st century favors the defense. And it's very difficult to make progress against forces that are dug in. So I think our expectations were the problem. We allow ourselves to jump to conclusions, and the reality is that this is a long, drawn-out struggle, and it's going to take a long time for either side to make substantial progress.
Now, as a war enters its third year, the leadership of both President Putin and Zelensky will be put to a test. This is why the globe, the international community, its attention is divided amongst two major conflicts, not just the one in Ukraine, but also in the Gaza Strip. What strategy do you expect from the two leaders this year?
Well, I think that Vladimir Putin is going to stay the course and continue trying to exert as much pressure as he can on Ukraine. He has dug a hole for himself. His invasion of Ukraine has been fairly disastrous for him, and it's put what was a very stable authoritarian regime into real risk. So he's now in a position where it would be very dangerous for him to back off. Zelensky is in a position where his back is against a wall. He has to keep on fighting as much as he's able. The Ukrainian people are very strongly united in opposition to Russia and desire to continue the war until they have every inch of their territory back. So I expect that there will be a very long, drawn-out conflict.
As you've alluded to, Dr. Stone, there is a bigger sense of unity in Ukraine. They want to defend their lands and their independence. But is it fair for us to assume from afar that there is a more noticeable division within Russia?
Oh, absolutely. And there is tremendous opposition to the war within Russia. The resistance to the draft has been unprecedented. In the first few weeks when the draft was instituted, 200,000 Russian young men fled the country to escape the draft. In comparison, during the Vietnam War, which was a very unpopular war in the United States, in the course of the whole war, 30,000 Americans went to Canada to avoid the draft. So this is a resistance on a much larger scale. And resisting the war in Russia is a very dangerous thing to do. You end up in jail very quickly. And Russian jails are very dangerous places to be. So it takes tremendous courage for ordinary Russians to stand up and say that we oppose this. Just in the last few days after Alexei Navalny's death under terrible circumstances in a penal colony in the north of Russia, 400 people have been arrested for putting flowers in public places to commemorate his death. Mm-hmm. This is understood to be an act of protest, and it's risky to do that.
Mm. But nonetheless, we're seeing increasing reports of resistance of drafting, for example, those who opposed a war in Ukraine at large, and those who stand by the passing of Alexei Navalny and his resistance and his fight for freedom in Russia. But it doesn't mean Ukraine doesn't have its own uphill battle. Military aid from U.S. and its allies seem crucial. It remains stuck at the Congress as Republican Party members are divided on the issue of U.S. aid. President Biden showed confidence that a $60 billion aid package is on its way. Would it pass a final congressional vote? And what would the future U.S. aid look like down the road?
Well, this is a big question. American mm-hmm. politics is in an uproar this year because it's an election year, and Donald Trump is the presumed nominee of the Republican Party. Donald Trump has a very unpredictable foreign policy, let us put it that way. He has threatened to pull out of NATO. He has threatened not to protect NATO allies who don't pay their fair share. He has been very unpredictable, for example, towards the leader of North Korea. Hmm. So this throws a huge wrench into the works. And in an election year, Republicans are very reluctant to hand any victories to a Democratic incumbent president. Mm. If a Republican president were calling for aid to Ukraine, the Republicans in Congress would all vote for it. Mm. But because it is possible to embarrass a Democratic president, they're holding it up. Mm. In particular, there's a handful of very extreme right-wing Republicans who have threatened to bring down the Speaker of the House if he allows the bill that has just passed the Senate to come to a vote in the House of Representatives. It has to pass both houses in order to become law. It seems likely that what will happen is that a majority of the members of the House will sign what's called a discharge petition, which allows them to bring the bill to the floor without the support of the Speaker of the House. And that actually would satisfy Speaker Johnson, because it would be politically risky for him to bring the bill to the floor. But if it's brought by a discharge petition, then it, most likely his supporters would not bring an end to his speakership.
Mm. Because it is an important election year in the United States, I guess we do have to jump to this question. The Republican frontrunner, President Trump, his possible comeback to the White House. How would this impact the course of war in Ukraine?
Well, honestly, Donald Trump is so unpredictable that I can't say with certainty what impact that would have. But I am quite sure that that is the basis of Putin's strategy, just to hold on until Donald Trump wins election, and then maybe he can strike a deal. Mm. So it's quite possible that Donald Trump would follow through on the promises he's made, that he would bring a rapid end to the war by pulling out U.S. support from Ukraine. Mm. I don't think that would actually bring a rapid end to the war. I think Ukraine would be able to fight on for a very long time, even without U.S. support. And I think U.S. allies in Europe would continue to provide support to Ukraine. But the war would enter an unpredictable and dangerous phase where Russia would start using threats of nuclear retaliation against NATO allies in order to try to intimidate them and prevent them from providing aid to Ukraine. Of course, some of the NATO allies would be determined to provide that aid nevertheless. Mm. So this is a dangerous situation that I hope will be avoided, because I hope Donald Trump will not become the next president.
Hmm. Now, despite vows of support and solidarity in the name of democracy, there appears to be growing division and hesitancy among the Western allies, not just the United States. How do you assess their level of support? And do you think perhaps the global attention waning may be partially due to the war in the Gaza Strip, or maybe because it's been 2 years already, has it deteriorated over time, the focus?
It has deteriorated. There was a tremendous surge of support in the first 2 years of the war. I suspect, actually, that the death of Navalny will tend to give another impulse of support to Ukraine, and will tend to underline in Western Europe how important it is to oppose Vladimir Putin. But the support for Ukraine has become softer in some of the key countries, in Germany, for example, and French President Macron has at various times kind of undercut U.S. diplomacy by trying to find a third way between Russia and the United States to try to negotiate this this situation. On the other hand, the eastern flank of NATO, countries like Poland, Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, are firmly committed to supporting Ukraine, because they're afraid that if Ukraine falls, they might be the very next ones to come under assault by Russia.
Mm. In fact, the Russian President Vladimir Putin did allude to threatening Poland and Baltics in an interview with Tucker Carlson. Now, what to make of that interview is an entirely different conversation, but just wanted to put it out there.
Yeah, well, just one thing that I thought was particularly revealing about that interview that I hadn't seen Putin say in the past was the degree of animosity that he holds towards Poland. He blamed Poland for hundreds of years of Russian difficulty in Ukraine, tracing things back to the 1640s. And he made the sort of preposterous claim that Poland was to blame for Hitler's invasion of Poland in 1939, because Poland was so unreasonable as not to turn over its territory to Germany. The implication being that Putin is making just claims for territorial concessions from Ukraine, putting himself in the position of Hitler. Remarkable. I've never seen any Russian leader who would make arguments like that, at least not openly.
And our final question today, NATO members are sounding the alarm over a potential Russian assault on NATO. How do you gauge a possibility of Russia expanding the war into a wider conflict? And maybe a follow-up question to that, should NATO take further steps towards Ukrainian membership at its upcoming summit in July?
Good questions. The NATO members are sounding the alarm in part because they're trying to rally each other to make contributions now and support Ukraine rather than face a much worse strategic situation in the future. I don't think it. So there was reporting that the foreign minister of Landsbergis of Lithuania was making comments like this over the weekend. I don't think it's that they anticipate an imminent invasion by Russia, and Russia certainly has its hands full in Ukraine right now. But it's another matter what might happen if Donald Trump became president and the credibility of the U.S. guarantee under Article 5 of the NATO Charter came into question. If that were the case, then Putin might very well see some advantage to threatening to pick off particular NATO allies in order to intimidate them, to prevent them from sending arms to Ukraine. And that's a circumstance in which I could imagine us getting closer to a militarized confrontation.
Should NATO take further steps then to allow Ukraine into its exclusive membership?
This has been something that Russia has always said would be the step that would lead to war.
Right.
That Russia would be prepared to fight to prevent Ukrainian membership. in NATO. But at this point, it's seeming to be the case that it's going to be very difficult to get a peace negotiation, a peace treaty between Russia and Ukraine without some kind of guarantee for Ukrainian security. Mm. If Ukraine agrees to a peace, some hypothetical peace treaty in some future time, it is going to want to have some guarantee that Russia isn't going to be able to initiate hostilities again and renegotiate the treaty as soon as the West, the Western coalition, has folded up its tents and taken its aid back home. Mm. All right, so that's that. There's a basic credibility problem there, and it seems likely that the only way that will be solved at this point is by Ukraine becoming a member of NATO. Ironically, exactly the thing that Putin originally went to war saying he was trying to prevent. Mm. Something that never would have happened if not for this war, because NATO was very leery of expanding further to the east and taking on new liabilities. Mm-hmm. But I think it may be something that is going to become a reality ultimately. Not this year, maybe in another year or two, when we get to the point of negotiating a settlement.
Dr. Stone, thank you very much for your insights. We appreciate it very much.
It's been a pleasure to talk to you. Have a nice day.
If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.